I can bring you in warm, or I can bring you in cold. I like those odds.
Hey everyone, you're listening to the Mandalorian Podcast. I'm Drew.
I'm Jeremiah.
And I'm Andrew.
And today we have another sweet episode for you. Episode 4, the technology.
Of the Disney Gallery, the Mandalorian docuseries.
Yes. So if you've been listening the last 3 weeks, we've been going over the Disney Gallery on Disney Plus, and it's going through pretty much how they made and who made and all the fun made stuff on The Mandalorian. So I hope you like what you're listening to, and you're just tuning in, welcome, and you are in a safe place and a good place, and yeah. So you guys want to dive in?
Let's do it.
Technology. So real quick, we're not going to do scene by scene like we've been doing the other episodes. I'm not going to say this every week because it's going to get old, because we still have 4 more episodes left. We're just going to go into it, talk about what we highlight, some things. It's not a super long episode probably, but, I hope you guys enjoy it. So let's get into it. Jeremiah and Andrew, what did you like? What did you not like? And let's get at it.
Well, Andrew and I had some previous experience with behind the scenes.
We did.
The Mandalorian, because we're big fans of the Corridor Crew on YouTube, who they do special effects and they react to good and bad CGI and stunts and stuff like that.
Not a
and
sponsor.
So they actually did
not a sponsor, but
if
shout
they want
out to,
if they want to sponsor,
heck yeah. Shout out to those guys. They're super cool dudes, all really good at what they do, and they love Star Wars. And two of them actually grew up in Duluth, or the Duluth area.
I have no idea.
Well, two of them are from Minnesota, so
cool.
Anyways,
yeah, so they're great. They did a reaction to some behind the scenes of The Mandalorian with the new technology that they used. And when I watched that segment on YouTube, I was like, I didn't realize basically the whole set was a computer, like a TV screen.
Yeah.
And so at first I was like, wow, they really pulled off something that was flawless. And so I was like, okay, that's cool. I had a lot of questions back then. But now with this episode of the Mandalorian Gallery,
they've been answered.
We got a lot more answers and detail on all that.
Yeah. So the title alone should probably tell you, it's about the technology and what they did differently in this movie, and what Jon Favreau and the crew at, why did I just space the name? I had it.
ILM.
And what they, I don't know why, I literally was saying it and it fell off my mind. So ILM and what they developed and the technology that they kind of started with, and it just shows that if you're Disney, you have money to do amazing things.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the coolest thing is, like, Disney has the money, but then at the same time, one of the things that we keep going back to, whether it's been in this podcast or the other podcast that we do, Empire Radio, which is our flagship podcast of the Empire Radio group of podcasts. Shameless plug. You should go listen to it. Super fun stuff. But one of the things that we keep going back to is that over the years, Star Wars has been on the forefront of the development of technology. I mean, ILM was started because of A New Hope. And now they are, along with Weta Digital and a few other studios, they're like one of the forefront like most used visual effects companies in the world.
Yeah.
And then, so like that's a huge contribution. And then not, you know, this isn't really jumping ahead because we're not going by scene, but when they were talking about George's influences right at the end of the episode, you know, Kathleen Kennedy and a few of the other directors were all talking about how George was always, you know, quote, 10 years ahead of the technology. He had a vision for what he wanted to accomplish, but the technology wasn't quite there yet. And so it was just really cool because, like, yeah, Disney has a ton of money, but this was done with a Star Wars production.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the coolest thing.
Yeah. It's done with the Star Wars production, and it's just funded by Disney. Pretty much.
Right.
Like, they gave them the money to do what they've always wanted to do, essentially, which is really cool.
Right.
And well, what's interesting, though, is that the show, first season, had, like, $100 million budget.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming a lot of that money went to building that
screen
studio.
Yeah.
Oh, was yeah.
Is it called the Volume? Is that what they're calling it?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. So I was confused a little bit on.
Yeah, it's called the Volume, but. And you know what? Just turn up your volume and listen to this conversation.
Anyway, so I think. So I wonder what like the budget is for season two, and how that will influence what they do.
Well. It's interesting, and again, I please everyone forgive me because I am not an expert.
I was going to say, what does this have to do with canon or non-canon?
Yeah. No, please forgive me because you're going to find out very quickly. While I am a very new to the game, aspiring videographer and video editor and whatever, I have so little knowledge about this stuff, but I love it. Like, I love. Love visual effects and like the science and the techniques and the technology behind it. So anyway, disclaimer out of the way. Speaking of budgets, you know, like this is a really expensive thing to get set up.
But once you're up.
But if you think of, but that's the thing. Like once you, I would imagine, again, I don't know for sure, but I would imagine that it's like a front end cost. Mm-hmm. And then
you're
there. Like you have it set up. Cause I mean, it's huge. I mean, you saw the scenes. I mean, it's a massive sound stage essentially surrounded by LED screens. But once you get that set up, and I'm sure it's modular too.
Which,
so like, once you get it set up,
modular.
Like, well, because there were different configurations. Some of the stages were smaller, and some of them were bigger. Some of them, the panels were in different spots.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, you can kind of mix and match where you go with those things. And so I feel like, once the system is set up, I mean, you just go back to it, you know?
Well, and I think I would hope that they would keep the same budget and use it for like other things now instead. It'd be kind of like nice, but I don't know. Because like Andrew was saying, like, I feel like that they have it now. It's already set up and like they can do what they want now. And now they can put that budget towards like different, more intense outfits, or I don't know. It's not like they're short on cash or anything, so I don't know why we're acting.
Sure,
like this is like a small budget program because it's really not at all. But
I mean, but comparatively, you know, these series have a significantly smaller budget than the movies do. You know,
yeah,
that's kind of the rule of thumb.
And it's just so much better than the movies somehow.
Well, we both know, well, all three of us know that it is because of the people that are behind it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
More so than the technology. Yep. But
hashtag give it to Dave, but
hashtag give it to Dave. Or John at this point, or honestly.
John and Dave.
Hashtag John and Dave. Anyone but Kennedy.
Dang.
Oh boy.
She was there. She gave us her 2 cents about when she did Indian in the Cupboard, and
which is like way long ago. I forgot that movie even existed.
I that movie always creeped me out kind of as a kid, and I also did not know that she had any part in that movie. But
oh, dude, you'd be surprised how many things she's been a part of.
I know
of
it makes
that
me
you never
depressed.
Knew about.
Yeah,
it really makes me depressed the more and more I hear about it. But
yeah, but this episode is called Technology, but really, it centered around the volume and this breakthrough, because you know, this is the first time this has ever been done on a production.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting to hear John talk about how George and all of these other people had kind of tried doing it from different angles and never really, like, they all had the idea or a similar idea and it never really worked. But then he brought everybody together, you know, these leaders from each of the fields,
mm-hmm.
and then they created this thing. And I thought that was super cool.
Well, and I liked at the beginning of the episode, John was talking about how a lot of times in production and movies and stuff, they are like, oh, we'll fix that later in editing, or we'll do this in editing and stuff that, and like the fix the lighting. And then he was talking about how those are the scenes that later on in life are the scenes that don't hold up, or the technology scenes that don't hold up because those were done after, or like the lighting, like people's shadows. He was talking about how like people, they'll add shadows to a scene that don't belong, and then it won't hold up later on in life when technology is getting better. And like that kind of was really cool to hear. And that's like kind of how they started this episode. But then, then he was just talking about how it's like, if you do it well first, you don't have to go back and do it. And the lighting is the biggest key. And that's why they had like this screen on top and to like portray a real sun and stuff like that. And the LED screens are so much better technology. And it was really cool.
And I think the one part in the whole series that I felt didn't look that great, well, I think it might have been in the first episode when there's a scene where they're riding the little, what's it called? Blurg? Is that what it was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you could tell that the lighting wasn't perfect on it because it was CGI'd and put into the scene. And I felt like it wasn't as great as everything else. And so that goes back to what he was saying, how once you put something in later, it doesn't always fit perfectly in it because it's so hard to match the lighting or whatever it is.
Well, and it's interesting, Jeremiah, you know, as you and I have over time been watching these Corridor Crew videos, the one thing that I have learned, and I'm sure you have picked up on, is how important and how just crazy easy it is to mess up in this lighting factor, you know, because as humans, subconsciously, before it even like really makes it into our conscious thought, we can tell when something doesn't look real.
Yeah.
Right.
We just do because we're used to real human interaction, real lighting and real shadows and stuff like that. And so, you know, that's why there are so many things that just don't look good. Because it was a good attempt, but it's just not the same as filming on a set and getting the real, you know, the real, I mean, there's a reason why you watch something like Saving Private Ryan,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, you don't question, I mean, of course, you know, it's a movie, but like, you don't question the reality of it.
Well, it's the same with like Lord of the Rings, like the first three movies, you don't question, like, those are people in costume. Like, you know what I mean? But then you look at The Hobbit, and you're like, boy, half this stuff is fake, and you know it. Like, it's not even, it kind of sucks. And those movies should have been done better, but we're not going to go into that. But it's just you can just tell. And, like, we talked about this and when we were going over the movies and stuff, with the Empire Radio, our other podcast, hashtag go check that out. But we were talking about how Leia's scene in that, when they give her the thing and she's gonna, like, she didn't look real. She kind of looked off.
Oh, you talking about in Rogue One?
Yeah, in Rogue One, she kind of looked a little different. But then,
I mean,
But then, what's his name looked good in some parts because of the lighting and because the angles they're doing, even though he was fake as well. And it's just sometimes it works better than others, but our eyes can catch it pretty quickly when it doesn't fully fit. And there's not, it's just better if you can do it the right way. Cause like when you look at Iron Man, like they're showing clips and stuff at Iron Man. Dude, that stuff looks so good still to this day. I don't know about you guys, but I thought it looked dope.
Oh, yeah.
When they're showing those clips of Iron Man falling down, like in Iron Man 1 looked good. I'm like, okay, yeah, that was so long ago already. So,
yeah.
And then, like, Jungle Book, she was going through that stuff. But, yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah, two notable things for me was, one, how John, they started this episode really kind of cataloging, the journey to the conception of this volume piece of equipment, because, you know, he worked on Jungle Book and there were things that, you know, he knows because of how much blue screen he was using in that movie. He knew the shadows elements, and he knew he had to get certain lighting elements right to make sure that the post-production could hold up. But then he moved to Lion King, and the big thing about Lion King is the camera work that they did in the within the VR world, which Jeremiah Corridor Crew has done quite a bit of stuff with, and if not the other channel, with Brandon, the guy he used to work with, Freddie.
I have no idea.
They have another channel. They have like a brother channel. They used to, I think they still are, they're in the same warehouse, but they actually use VR stuff to film. And they kind of dabbled in some of those techniques. So I thought that was cool. But, and then how this volume is kind of this merging of all of the best of all of these different worlds.
Scale of it all.
Okay.
I mean,
let's have a moment of silence for that joke.
I mean, it kind of is, though, right?
But the other notable thing for me was seeing kind of how this technology has brought us full circle, where movies were made early on with very practical effects. I mean, one of the things that I've learned from, again, you know, sorry to continuously quote the corridor stuff,
for real, but
some of the stunt stuff they do, you know, they talk about how like in the old cowboy movies, they had like guys who were horseback riders, like legitimate riders, and they'd be extras and they'd be doing these crazy stunts and everything was practical. And like when a horse would fall, the horse would literally fall and the guy would have to stunt fall. So like we started in this era of extreme practicality, so much so that people used to get hurt. But it was like very grounded in reality, right? And then over time, the scope of the human idea and the human fantasy for what movies could become increasingly got larger. You know, I just finished watching through all of the Alien movies, and like by the 1970s or late 70s, early 80s, like sci-fi was becoming a thing, you know? So we've expanded, and now we got to the point where you're like, we can't do some of this stuff with practical effects anymore. We have to go into CG because the vision is just getting too big. And now this technology is really cool because it's brought us so far in advance that now the CG aspect is helping to create a practical set, which is just really cool to me because now we can get this grand vision without having to fly to Tunisia, without having to go to some remote forest, without having to completely build a soundstage of a space hangar. And you can do it in a single soundstage. You can, you know, it's rendered in real time, which is super cool because it makes changing things so much easier than having to do it in post-production with a blue screen, you know? But it's come full circle where CG has gotten so good. Now we're incorporating it to create and go back to the roots of practicality, which I think is the reason, like one of the massive reasons visually this show looks so real and grounded. I mean, I didn't really take a ton of notes like I normally do, but one of the things that I did, I've got like four things. I'm going to grab them real quick.
Grab them. But what I was going to say was that I just think it's really interesting how they're bringing in people in the gaming world to help with this technology. And like Epic Gaming is involved and like stuff like that. And I don't know if you guys are aware, but Epic Games, also not a sponsor, but they're on the groundbreaking of the new technology that PS5 is about to drop. And I don't know if you guys seen that stuff.
the did you talking about the Unreal Engine
Unreal 5? Engine 5. That stuff did is you know? Literally, no pun intended, unreal.
Boo.
I said no pun intended.
I know. Did you know that there is an office within 45 minutes of where I live for Unreal? Or not Unreal. No. Epic?
Epic Games?
Yeah. They have an office that's, I think, like 30 minutes away from me right now.
That's cute.
Well, drive over and see if you can get a sponsorship.
Yeah, you should get... Well, I was going to say get a job, but yeah, that works too.
I actually was looking at jobs there today. And
security?
I do not have the qualifications for that.
That's fair.
So, anyway,
you could do music for like Fortnite. Oh, Lord. Oh,
one, I would not want to do music for Fortnite.
But
you could pay like $1 million and you'd be set for life.
What are you talking about?
Just do one little song and you'll be golden.
Yeah, I guess it's
make
fair.
It five, but then you'll be golden.
So I'm gonna say these two things and then I'll stop nerding out. So one thing that I, speaking about the realism of this thing, one thing that I realized was not a set was the cantina from episode 4.
Yeah, it kind of made me sad, not gonna lie.
But that's so cool. Like I saw a flash of that towards the end and I was like, wait, what? Like I knew that there were practical set elements. Obviously they had to have tables and like a bar and stuff, but I was like,
yeah,
I would have thought they built that set, but seeing that on the screens, I was like, holy crap. That's so convincing. And then the other thing was when Moff Gideon gets out of the TIE fighter.
Oh yeah, that was cool.
You see the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And that little element, because it was able to react to the light so naturally, like it's so much work to reproduce that in CG.
Mm-hmm.
So like just having that there was such a cool advantage. And I saw that and I was like, man, the dust is there. The lighting is there and they don't have to do anything with it except for touch it up. Like that is one less thing that they have to do. So anyways, it's such cool technology. And I'm, like, honestly, really excited to see how they're going to use it in the future, because I mean, this really needs to be the new standard.
Well, I think it's going to be the new standard with Disney. I wouldn't be surprised if they have a bunch of patents on this now. I hope that Jon Favreau at least has some patents on it so that
he said in there specifically that all this technology is available to everyone.
Oh, yeah, it's not proprietary.
They just have to put it all together. Just that Disney was the first
to do it,
group to take all these different aspects of technology and bring them together in one space.
It makes me
anyone can do it.
It makes me wonder if the new like movie is gonna do this, like the new movie that what's his name is doing, Taika Waititi, if he's gonna do it.
Oh, probably
kind of stuff, because he was like mentioned in this episode that he liked the technology and was really cool. I mean, they all kind of said that, but like, I don't know. It just seems like they're gonna go forward with this. I mean, it's gonna save them money actually in the long run, I think, because like Andrew's saying, like,
you don't have to go to sets.
You don't have to go across the world to build a set to film. You know, I mean, it's cool. It's kind of a little sad, but it's also really cool. I don't know. It has its cool things and bad things, but
like
more up
think
than
about,
downs for sure.
Yeah, like think about how many times on Star Wars alone, being out in the desert, they've lost thousands of dollars of props because of storms. Yep. Like that happened on episode 1.
Mm-hmm.
A sandstorm blew in and they had to like basically recreate their whole camp.
Yep.
And so like it takes the risk out of it, the financial risk, but then
For sure.
You know,
so if I was an actor, I would want to go visit all these places, you know, but I get it.
Oh, sure. I mean, but then again, like you heard them talking about how immersive it was.
Oh, yeah.
And how like there wasn't any guessing. It was like it was so real and easy to react to.
Well, that was,
and I think it goes such a long way for their performances, too.
Yeah, that was
Carl Weathers was talking about that and how, you know, each actor in a scene, you know, they're told what the environment is, and so they're each going to have their own rendering in their own mind of what the set looks like.
Yeah.
And so, but now that they can all look at the same thing, they can be all unified in how they interact in that environment because it's all one thing that they all can have in common.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and they're even talking about how when they're going in the boat part, how they're getting kind of nauseous because it felt so real. It felt like they're legitimately going down a river of lava. And he was saying like he was afraid he was going to fall into lava. And she was like holding on to the side because she felt like she was going to fall over because it's just like so realistic. And like I can imagine that like when I've done like the void and stuff or like the VR stuff at like Disney World and Hollywood Studios and stuff like that. So like I understand that feeling when you're in a VR simulator setup and you feel like, oh, if I go over this, I'm going to fall down this cliff. Or like I played one of the Stormtrooper one in the void. And like there's a part where like Darth Vader is going across this like real walk bridge trying to get at you. And like you can it feels like you're going to fall off into this inside the Death Star and like fall into a hole. It's really cool. And so I can imagine like being surrounded by that and not realizing what's real and what's not. And you're so into the moment of acting. It makes sense. Like they felt like they were going to one be sick or two fall. Like it's really cool. Yeah.
But then you get such a good performance out of that.
You oh just yeah, for sure.
You can't get on a green screen or a blue screen, you know?
No.
So, I mean, it's so cool. And just the benefits that you get from having, like you're talking about the reflections on the Mandalorian's armor. Like that's so valuable. Like yeah. Just so valuable to have that there in real time and not have to worry about it, you know, near as much later in post-production. So,
well, yeah, there's that one scene. I forget what episode it is, but the sun hits his armor and it goes across the screen. And it literally, like, if you're look, I think it's, I want to say it's in episode 4. But like the lighting hits his armor and it does like the like shining light across the whole screen. And I'm like, it looks like they kind of mess that up in like video editing, but then it's just like what the light would do in that angle. Yeah. And they just kept it. They're just like, we're just going to go with it because that's going to happen. And it's pretty cool. Yeah.
So I was thinking, about this technology, both of you guys, I was just wanted to tell you something special. So I was thinking about this technology and I was thinking about how immersive it is and how like I wish I could go to different places and just kind of experience it in real time. And one of the places that I really miss going is Wesley Andrews.
Oh, boo. How did I not?
I'm allowed to make at least one bad joke an episode.
Roll it. Just roll it.
And the crazy thing is they're our sponsor. just check this out.
Hey everyone, Andrew here. I'm pleased to tell you that the sponsor for today's episode is Wesley Andrews Coffee and Tea. If you don't know anything about Wesley Andrews, you definitely should. They're an award-winning coffee roaster and shop in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and they make fantastic coffee. The awesome thing is that they have a subscription service that gets those amazing coffee beans delivered to your door on an either weekly, bi-weekly, or a monthly basis. Unfortunately, we're all being negatively affected by this virus right now. But that being said, what a better time to try some new coffee and support a local business. I know they'll greatly appreciate it, and we will too. After all, using the code EMPIRERADIO with a capital E and a capital R with no space at checkout, when you start a new subscription at wesleyandrews.cc, you'll get 50% off your first purchase. I can't think of a better deal. Get 50% off, support a local Minneapolis coffee shop, and support your favorite Star Wars podcast. In the words of Emperor Palpatine, do it.
Do it.
Yeah, you should do it, y'all. Just go do it. So yeah.
Yeah.
There was one thing they didn't really explain well that I was wondering if one or both of you could explain more. So
let us help.
Are the images on the screens like they went to a site and took video of it, or is it all computer animated images?
they went and digitally recreated real landscapes.
So both.
So yes, the answer is yes. There, it's it's kind of both. But what we are seeing, at the very least, is an incredible digital echo of what is a real place. You know, best case scenario, it's actually the thing, you know, in the background. So
yeah,
it's both.
That's where kind of like Epic came in. They did some of the scenes and they edited it and like took clips of other things, like probably like Cantina, like the outside of that, they probably took shots from other movies and like figured that out and stuff like that. So I think it's a little bit of both. Like they found scenes or like landscapes and then they touched them and stuff like that. And yeah. So yes, both. It's a little bit of both.
Okay. But
it's the movie magic.
Yes. Yeah, but next week's episode is called Practical. So we'll probably see about, you know, the actual physical sets that they used in some of them. Because I think some of them were actually outside in an actual environment and stuff.
Yeah, so they did that.
We'll see, you know, specifically what scenes were in the volume and what were not, and, you know, the differences that they took.
So I really hope that they get into, like, outfits and stuff like that, because I love that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah.
For practical, yeah, it would be in there.
Yeah, like growing up, rewatching all like the scenes of like Lord of the Rings and like how they like design all the costumes and the masks and stuff. I would love to see stuff like that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So all of our listeners need to be prepared for a lot of references to how great the practical effects of the original trilogy were.
Yes.
Because it's probably going to happen.
Be prepared. Oh, line
two. Okay. I mean, it's all Disney now, so I guess you're not.
I mean, then it's all John Favreau.
Well, that's fair.
The new stuff is, anyways. This is random, but did you guys like the Jungle Book?
Yeah,
I saw both of them, so like I get confused.
Oh, you saw Mowgli, the Netflix one?
Yeah, I saw both of them, so I can't even remember which one's which now.
I've never seen the Mowgli one. Because it looks totally stupid. But
I think I like the... Okay, now I'm thinking about it. I think like the ending of the Mowgli one...
Was better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think visually...
Was that the one where he realized he had the Force?
No.
And built his own lightsaber in the jungle?
Yes.
With the giant monkey... That was okay. So that was kind of, this is random. But that was my issue with the Mowgli one, is that why was what's his name so big?
The bear?
No, the monkey. King, what's that?
Oh.
Whatever it is. It's not even a monkey, it's a orangutan, but he was like a giant.
Wasn't he big in the cartoon though?
No, I don't think so.
Not, I mean, I think he was kind of like proportionately average in the cartoon.
Yeah, but they literally make him like King Kong, I remember, right? Or am I off?
I honestly think he was giant in
the movie.
Was the first one that came out?
Yeah.
The Jungle Book?
Mm-hmm.
I can't even remember which ones are which now. Like,
that's fair. Have you guys seen the new Lion King?
Yeah.
I have not yet.
Well, it's on Disney Plus.
It's all right.
I mean, there's no reason. There's no reason I haven't. It's just...
It's okay, though, honestly.
It's just there.
My thing was, because Mowgli, they had a real person interact with fake creatures. It felt more real. But because they're all real fake animals talking and interacting, it just feels... Doesn't feel real. I don't know. It has this weird effect. I don't know.
I think animals talking in general is going to pull you out pretty quickly.
Kind of.
Yeah, I think the Mowgli one, like the voice actors had the mocap face thing. And so like the faces on the animals like move awkwardly, like it's a human face when it shouldn't. And so it looks weird. But
yeah, I think that was my reason why I didn't want to watch it, because the wolves look weird.
Yeah.
All of this is reminding me of Beast Wars,
which is a good show.
Never watched it.
It does not hold up.
It does not hold up, though. It does not.
Anyways,
don't go watch it.
We are not.
It was good.
We are not here to talk about that.
Wait, is that the one that they did on Corridor Crew a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, they did. They did.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't know what you're talking about.
It was a Transformers series, and it was like one of the first that I really got into.
I love that as a kid. There's literally videos of me watching that with my older brother, with probably no clothes on, watching that. Growing up. But like,
and on that note,
we used to watch all the times, and then I watched it not too long ago. I'm like, this does not hold up at all. This is horrible.
Oh, yeah, this is not good.
But yeah,
well, here's the thing, you know what does hold up well?
Star Wars
books.
Oh
yes, and Star Wars books.
Oh okay.
And I told you guys before we end the episode, I told both of you about this earlier in the week, but I wanted to give a free pro tip.
Yeah, not a
to
sponsor,
all of our listeners.
Not a sponsor.
Not a sponsor. Okay, none of this is a sponsor. But a buddy of mine actually turned me on to this app called Libby, Libby. And again, not a sponsor. But if you have an active library card, you can put the library card into the app when you start it up for the first time. And then it acts as a way for you to reserve and put on hold and like check out audiobooks from the catalog that your library has that you have for the card. And so like right now I have Death Troopers and what was the other one? Oh, you'll enjoy this, Drew. Lost Stars.
Oh yeah, you told me.
I have both of those audiobooks on my phone right now. It's entirely free. There's no cost. All you need is a library card and the app, which is free as well. And you too can listen to Star Wars audiobooks at home. It's like the same as Kindle, or not Kindle. What is the Amazon one?
Audible?
Fire.
Audible. There it is. I was blanking on the name. It's just like Audible, except you don't have to pay for it.
That's sweet. I need to pay for mine. I just love
the crazy.
I can buy more.
The crazy thing is that the Hennepin County Library in downtown Minneapolis has
also not a sponsor, but keep going.
Also not a sponsor, but they have Star Wars: Light of the Jedi, which is a new like High Republic era book, and the first book of the new Thrawn Chiss Ascendancy novel on audiobook there.
Are
with
they even
release
out
dates
yet?
For both of those.
I was like, what?
No. But you can put them on hold.
Yeah, so, okay, real quick, this is Star Wars, so it counts. What is this other Thrawn book? I thought they're only doing three.
Timothy Zahn is writing a new trilogy.
So there's going to be another trilogy.
Yes, and it's going to be way more centered around his people and him and his people rather than him being in the Empire.
Gotcha. Well, I have
so
one
like
more
a
credit.
Prequel?
I don't know, but Timothy Zahn is one of my favorite authors, so I'm totally fine with whatever it is, unless it's a romance novel.
True. Who does Light of the Jedi?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's there. And if you're listening, you're like, I don't like audiobooks. I don't like books in general.
Then you can high-five Jeremiah whenever you see him.
Yep.
Well, what I was going to say is that Star Wars audiobooks are phenomenal in the sense it's just like watching a movie with your eyes closed.
Jeremiah, like, with you narration. Would love it, seriously. You don't
there's
even have
sound effects.
Just put it on your
voice
sound and sit on your couch.
I'd fall asleep pretty quick.
There's sound effects, there's voice acting, there's music. It's good. It's good stuff.
It's the best. Honestly, when I read the books, I get the audio version and listen and read at the same time.
Oh, heck yeah.
That's
surround sound for your eyes.
Yeah, that's literally what I do every time.
That didn't make any sense. I'm sorry.
Surround sound for your eyes.
It makes the volume of the book.
Is that like having eyes on the back of your head?
Ooh.
No, this is actually kind of funny. There was my high school radio station. They had one of those little radio bites in between like all the pop songs that they would play of the current times. And it was like whatever the station name was, it's like having binoculars for your ears. And I always thought that was the funniest thing because it made no sense, but whatever.
My high school did not have a radio station,
but
sounds cool.
Sure. Anyways, so we've gone far too long about stuff that's like really not related to this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, go check out audiobooks from Star Wars or books or do them both.
Yeah.
Just do it. Jeremiah, do it. It's like the void or the volume of your eyes and ears.
Of your mind.
Yeah. It's
all right, this is getting out of here. Let's close this up. Let's wrap it up.
All righty. Well, I think that's it for technology and the Mandalorian, this episode of the Mandalorian podcast. I am Drew.
I'm Jeremiah.
And I'm Andrew.
And may the Force be with you.
Always.